Russ, that's the next of Napoleon Hill's main principles for building huge sums of wealth. And are you ready to discuss that?
Yes, decision, the mastery of procrastination and making decisions. Napoleon Hill points out this is so valuable for anyone who wants to be successful. There was a survey of 25,000 men and women that showed that the lack of making decisions was one of the major causes of failure in all the thousands of people who failed. And Napoleon points out that there's two things we have to realize. One is we have to know what we want if we're going to get it. And secondly, we must conquer procrastination. We're forced to make decisions in life whether we want to or not, so we have to learn to make decisions. You know, many people are paralyzed by lack of decisions. They can't decide on anything. I've been with women, one lady in particular that would, you know, she couldn't even decide what movie she wanted to see, so we always would go to a movie I wanted to see, and then sometimes she'd complain. So finally I told her, you are the one to select the movie, and she would just agonize over it. Now this is a small case, going to one movie or another isn't going to change your life, but it's indicative of the fact that we must make decisions in our life. The decisions we make about the business we're going to do or start, the decisions we make on who our friends will be, the decisions on who our partner will be in life, and who will not be, is so vital to your success. So we have to make decisions, and the best way to do it is to just force yourself to make decisions on big issues and small issues. Never let things go, because it's like cleaning out the garage. You know it should be cleaned out. You want to find some tools or some things that's there, but you don't want to do it, and a month later, the job hasn't been done. So it's best to take action. Make a decision and then take action. When something needs to be done, make the decision to do it and then do it. And it sounds easy, and I know sometimes it's hard, but lack of decision-making and the little things in life usually will lend to lack of decision-making in the big things. Then about procrastination, boy, this is a big one for me, because I will admit to you freely and to the listeners that Russ von Holscher is a procrastinator. I find all kinds of ways to put off things that must be done. And I'm going to give you some tips on how I've overcome this to some degree. I'll talk about that later. But you know, Napoleon gives us case after case in this particular chapter on decisions on brave men who risked everything, including their own lives, by making monumental decisions. Now, fortunately for most of us, unless you're in the military or you're a cop or something, you probably won't have to make too many life and death decisions in your life. But you will have to make decisions constantly, every day. You'll have to have long-range decisions and goals, but you'll have to make small decisions every day. And the way we do this, of course, is to realize that if we don't make a decision, the decision will be made for us. Other people will make the decision for you if you don't make a decision. Or things will never happen unless you don't make it, if you don't make a decision. So it's vital to our success to make decisions, and the best way to make them, I believe, is to make decisions that you know will keep you going forward, enhancing your life. As for dealing with that little demon known as procrastination, here's some things that's worked for me. One major objective I've wanted to conquer for years is procrastination. And only a few years ago did I find a solution that works most of the time. And that is, I set deadlines on everything, big and small, that I really want to do. And that's the important, do you really want to do it? If you don't want to clean out your garage or cut your lawn, you should hire someone to do it for you. That's okay. There's no problem with that. But if it's something you really think that you want to do and you're the only one that can do it, then you've got to take action. And I set deadlines. Now, working with clients and working with turning out sales material and books and things, there's often a deadline when it must be done and go to the printer. So that deadline is set for me, and a few days before the deadline comes in effect, I'm often working 10, 12, 13 hours a day to accomplish it. This is not the best way to do it, but I'm just being honest with you. However, on other things where there's no preset, predetermined deadline, I found that if I set a deadline, and if I tell myself I'm going to accomplish this by Friday, I must do this by Friday, by setting a deadline, I usually accomplish it. So that's my tip for you. You've got to make decisions, or other people will make them for you. Life will make them for you. Time waits for no one. And you don't want life and other people making your life's decisions. So you have to be proactive and make decisions. And secondly, to overcome procrastination, you might want to take my tip to set deadlines for everything that you really need to do, that you want to do, and that you can do. If you do this, I think you will be a better decision maker, which will enhance your life tremendously. And secondly, you'll overcome that horrible monster known as procrastination. Now I'll throw it out to the group.
Hey, Rush.
Yeah.
I was going to say I really like your deadlines statement, because I'm another. I feel like we're standing in a meeting now. We should be getting our coffee and announcing our name and introducing ourselves to the group. I am also a procrastinator.
Procrastination?
What do
they call it? Anonymous.
It's been 8 months since my last decision.
Well, I'll tell you what. My secret is one of the same, and that's one of the reasons why I publish a newsletter, is because it forces me to meet a weekly deadline. It forces me to create something that then I can cobble together later and put into pieces, take the pieces and create product from. And I've been forced week after week after week to create it. That's one of the neat tips I've got, is it's a reason to do a newsletter. It forces you to get something out the door on a set schedule. The other one is something I learned from TJ. And he mentioned this in the previous, one of the earlier segments or coming up. I'm not sure. We're kind of doing some of these out of order, but he mentioned the ready, fire, aim angle. Another secret is to outline a product, and this is basically for information products, which is one of the heaviest things I deal with, and many of us here. Outline your product and then get the promotion rolling while you create it. A, this gets orders in and gets income coming in and shows you the interest level. B, forces you to get it done.
Well, sure, and I love what you've said over the years, Russ. I wish I could hear it in your words. Something about a job well started is a job half done. Is that what you always say?
When I'm writing a book, and I've written probably over 50 books and manuals for sure, I've always felt that once I started, because I delay and procrastinate and fiddle faddle around, but when I finally sit down and start the book. And this is true with sales material and other things. When I write the first few words, I feel I'm half done because I've overcome all that stuff that I was dealing with maybe for many days or many weeks or even months to get myself in a point where I'm sitting there ready to start. So I've always thought a job started is a job half done.
One of the techniques I learned when I was studying fiction is to overcome writer's block, which is similar to what we're talking about here. And that's just, if nothing else, write. Start writing. Do chain of thought. Just start pouring stuff onto paper, even if it doesn't have anything to do with it. In fact, the more gibberish, the better, because eventually your mind will rebel and go, make some sense, and you'll start writing stuff that makes sense. And I've seen that work really well.
Well, I always have to throw the first page away. It's never any good on anything.
Hey, Russ. This is
yeah.
Ken. I can really identify with what you said about the procrastination. Matter of fact, being an entrepreneur and kind of calling your own shots and everything is a tremendous blessing, but it can also be a tremendous curse for the same reasons that you just pointed out, is that when you don't have somebody standing over your shoulder telling you when you can take a break, when you can come and go, and so forth, It's easy to procrastinate, and it's easy to just always say mañana, leave it for the next day, and it's one of the things I struggle with constantly, and I believe it's a common characteristic of all entrepreneurs.
Well, I think 95% of the people in our country and the world work for other people because they really don't want to make decisions, and they're procrastinators, and so they have a boss that says, do this and do that, and then just like a robot, they do it. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to be successful in your own business, you've got to make decisions or you're absolutely fried. You have no chance of success if you don't make decisions. So if you want others to tell you what to do, for God's sakes, just continue to work for others.
Well, there's an alternative that the deadline technique doesn't work too well for me because I've fought deadlines for years, and so now all I do is procrastinate and feel guilty because I missed my deadline. But I have a friend that's in business for themselves too, and we just kind of serve as each other's source of accountability. If I'm working on something and I say, well, I have to write a sales letter today and get that started. Tomorrow when I talk to them, they will say, did you start that letter? How is your sales letter coming? And that is just enough accountability. I said I would do something by a certain time, and they do the same thing. They tell me things they're working on, and I'll say, well, how are you coming on the project you're working on? And then they kind of report to me their accomplishments and where they stand. Or I'll say, well, I thought you were going to have that done by Friday. And they'll say, well, you know, this happened, but I'll have it by Monday. It's just a little bit of accountability. They're not responsible for me. They're not going to fuss at me if I do anything, if I don't meet my commitments, nor will I to them. But it's just someone out there who knows I said I would do it by this point, and did I keep my commitment? And that's just a little bit of accountability from working for other people that many people moving from being employed to being self-employed could benefit by doing that.
Well, I think it's a good idea, but for me it is to be accountable to myself because I beat myself up if I don't do what I say I'm going to do. So I say to myself, you know, you don't keep your word. When you say you're going to do something, maybe you will and maybe you won't. I take the to thy own self be true approach. And I think what you said about two friends working to help each other is a great idea. But I think for some people, they can take the to thy own self be true. And if you tell yourself, look, who are you and what are you if you don't keep your word, that's kind of like a friend, you know, like a second person telling you, come on now, you got to get the job done.
Well, there is. And there's even something, you know, some strange power in making a decision. Let us not forget that the derivation of the word decision comes from incision. That is to cut off, to make firm. And so a lot of times people have had their life breakthroughs following through with a decision, and what that decision does is it allowed them, gave them the motivation to take risks, to go out and do work, whatever it was. For instance, in Chapter 1, we saw and read the story about Edwin Barnes. He took a risk. He decided he was going to be the partner of the world's greatest inventor, Thomas A. Edison. He got on the got on the freight train and went to see him, and lo and behold, he did achieve all his goals. Gunsilas, who's in one of these chapters, I believe it's the last.
Okay, it looks like Ted got cut off.
Yeah, right in the middle of some good stuff.
Okay, well, let's make a decision and just move on. and practice what we preach here and hope that Ted comes back. You know, I like the word where we've been talking about how it applies to motivating ourselves to get things done, but I also love this great quote that says we are who we decide to be. And that's, to me, that's the power of goal setting. It's the deciding, you know, having sort of like what some people call a mission statement, just making rules for ourselves on what we will and what we will not do. And I love your whole Shakespearean thing, Russ, about to thy own self be true. That's the quote that I use to get myself out of bed almost every morning, especially on the mornings I don't want to get out of bed. That's the quote that does it for me. To thy own self be true. And it's what you do in the dark that counts. It's what you do when nobody's looking. And, you know, the subject of motivation is such a fascinating subject to me, and I've read a lot of books and thought a lot about different things. My best idea is that for each one of us, at different times, we're motivated by different things. So there's no one way for any of us to motivate ourselves at any time, and what works best for one person may only work sometimes for you. So my best thinking is that you go out and try a bunch of different ways to keep yourself jazzed up and fired up, and you try different things at different times. Does anybody have anything to add to that?
TJ, this is Eric. I wanted to make a quick point here, and I'm kind of drawing off of what Don said and also what you were saying there. I think that we all, as a perspective from our roundtable group, all know what success feels like and have all done it. So making a decision for us to go out there and hit another home run because we've already hit one is easier than somebody that hasn't actually gone out there and hit one out of the park yet. So what I'm saying is, and I think Don hit it right on the head when he said get a friend, get somebody else, and it's the mastermind technique coming back into play. Get somebody else that you guys can come up with a plan together and make decisions together and hold each other accountable so that you can get that first home run. And then you can go out there and as you start developing success as a group, can start going out there and thinking more as a standalone entity. I think that's a very good kind of way to get started.
And you know, oftentimes the inability to make a decision is just based on fear. You're exaggerating the consequences of that action. When I was a psychology major in college, we used to run rats in a maze. And, you know, the rat would go down one maze and would get rewarded and go down the other side and he would get shot. And as you made the decision harder of which maze to run down, when you reached a point where the rat couldn't make a decision, they would stop and start grooming themselves and licking their paws and wiping their face, and they would sit there endlessly because they were afraid to make the wrong decision. And I think that's what we do, is that we're afraid that we'll make the wrong decision because we exaggerate the consequences in our mind.
Right, and we just clean our desks and organize our workspaces.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And so, you know, it's much better to make the decision, face the consequences, and move on and correct. And it's not nearly as frightening as in reality as it always is in our mind.
That is such a good point, because the fear of failure is something that dominates so many lives. And all of us deal with it to some degree or another. But we have to realize it's okay to make the wrong decision, because we can correct it and make another decision. I think Eileen Rohleder said once, do something even if it's wrong. I mean, a decision that's wrong that can be corrected is better than to sit there paralyzed and make no decision.
Well, making no decision is making a decision, and it's making the absolute decision that you don't want.
Right.
Well, and oftentimes the best decision, I love this quote that says, when given any choice where you have a set of objections, you know, you have a set of different areas that you can go in, always choose the one that's the most bold. And somebody said that back in the 17th century, and I don't think that can even be more true than it is today, because, you know, I love the idea that luck seems to favor the bold, and that, you know, you sometimes not only is the worst decision making no decision, but also sometimes the worst decision is being too conservative and too careful and too cautious. I think for every business that blows up and explodes in bankruptcy or whatever, there's probably another 1,000 that never achieve, you know, they make the exact opposite mistake. They're too careful, too cautious, too conservative.
Well, remember, if you'll take Jeff's advice that he was giving earlier about move in small steps, that also makes decision-making easier because the consequences of those small steps are never really drastic. If you failed at one of those small steps, you have failed small. So the consequences are not severe, so therefore you have less reluctance to make a decision to move another step.
Well, you know, that's a good place to wrap this tape up, Don. You just hit the nail right on the head. And those of us in direct response marketing, we live by that rule when it comes to when we test small. We test bold, audacious ideas, but we test them very small so that just in case we lose all of our money, the money that we lose is very small. And if we roll it out, we can roll out and make millions of dollars. So, well, now let's go on to the next tape and discuss even more of Napoleon Hill's powerful wealth-building principles.
Okay, now we're going to discuss Chapter 9 of Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. It's persistence, and that happens to be my chapter, so I'm just going to get started here. Persistence is such a great subject matter for me, and I think it's because my wife always tells me I'm persistent. And, you know, the more I study entrepreneurs and people who are successful, I find that they all have this same very important trait and characteristic, persistence. You know, when I wanted my next vehicle, I was persistent. She kept telling me, man, you don't give up. And I wanted this certain vehicle, and, you know, I really wouldn't stop at anything. She said, well, the car you have now works just fine. And I wouldn't give up. I wanted this certain vehicle, and I finally ended up getting it, and I think it was because I wore her down. But anyway, she says I have the qualities of persistence, and I think that's something that runs true of all entrepreneurs, so I'm so glad to be talking about it. And, you know, as I looked through this chapter again in my research and really started taking to heart the concepts and the things that Napoleon had discussed in regards to this subject, it's astounding that something like this was said so many years ago. You know, in the 20s and 30s, this was something that was really shocking back then. Today, some people might take these principles for granted, but I think a lot of people really need a refresher course in these principles. So it's great to be going over all of these, but I'm especially happy to be talking about persistence. You know, right at the beginning of this chapter, Napoleon says, willpower and desire, when properly combined, make an irresistible pair. Men who accumulate great fortunes are generally known as cold-blooded and sometimes ruthless. Often they are misunderstood. What they have is willpower, persistence, willpower mixed with persistence, and place back of their desires to ensure the attainment of their objectives. And he goes into a great story about Henry Ford, and later in the chapter, he goes back to Henry Ford. And so I'm just going to share with you a little bit about what he said about Henry Ford, and I think it's so profound as it relates to persistence. He says, Henry Ford has been generally misunderstood to be ruthless and cold-blooded. This inconception grew out of Ford's habit of following through in all of his plans with persistence. I have observed men like Henry Ford who started at scratch and built an industrial empire of huge proportions with little else in the way of beginning but persistence. Or Thomas A. Edison, who with less than 3 months of schooling became the world's leading inventor and converted persistence into the talking machine, the moving picture machine, and the incandescent light, to say nothing of half a hundred other useful inventions. I had the happy privilege, he says, of analyzing both Mr. Edison and Mr. Ford year by year over a long period of years, and therefore the opportunity to study them at close range. So I speak from actual knowledge when I say that I found no quality save persistence in either of them that even remotely suggested the major source of their stupendous achievements. Now think about that. He's saying he studied these guys, geniuses, Henry Ford and Thomas Edison. He studied them for years, knew intimately about what they were doing. It's not like us today where we go back and we have to study what other people said about him. He was right there in the times, and he was studying these guys. And he says, without persistence, there's no other quality they had that would have got them where they were today or where they were at the time. Think about that. No other quality but persistence. I think that's just incredible to me. He goes on to say the majority of people are ready to throw their aims and purposes overboard, to give up at the first sign of opposition or misfortune. A few carry on despite all opposition until they retain their goal. These are the Fords, Carnegies, Rockefellers, Edisons, and of course our time. We have people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and people like that use this principle and all these principles really to achieve their great success. So that's a great foundation for this chapter. So I definitely encourage you to go take a closer look at exactly what he was saying. You know, he goes on to talk a little bit, another part of this chapter. He talks about if you're following this book with the intention of applying the knowledge it conveys, your first test as to your persistence will come when you begin to follow the six steps described in the second chapter. Unless you are one of the 2 out of every 100 who already have a definite goal at which you're aiming and a definite plan for its attainment, you may read the instructions and then pass on with your daily routine and never comply with those instructions. So, again, he's talking about persistence and what it takes to carry through with your plans. And it's not just a matter of having goals, that's the first step, but persistently carrying them out to completion. And I think that's one of the important things that a lot of us forget to do. We make some goals, and we end up throwing those goals away that for whatever reason we don't have the persistence to see them through. He also says, weak desires bring weak results just as a small amount of fire makes a small amount of heat. And if you find yourself lacking in persistence, this weakness may be remedied by building a stronger fire under your desires. And I think that's a great, another great quote. This book is full of great quotes. I mean, we could probably come up with a quote book alone that just has Napoleon Hill quotes in it from this particular work. It's just a great quote book. Weak desires bring weak results. So if you think about it, think about where you are today and what your plans and your goals are. First of all, do you have plans and goals? If you don't, you're certainly not going to have the persistence to see them through because you don't even have any. But if you have weak results, look at your desires. Are your desires as strong as they need to be for you to have strong goals? You may say to yourself, I want to make $1 million. But do you really have the desire to see that through? If you don't, then you certainly will never have the persistence to carry it through. Fortunes gravitate to men whose minds have been prepared to attract them just as surely as water gravitates to the ocean. Another great quote. He also talks in this chapter about surrounding yourself with a mastermind group. Well, how convenient. Here we are as a mastermind group talking to you about all these secrets. I want to encourage you to do the same thing. If you want to follow through with persistence and you want to follow through with everything you're reading throughout this book and on these tapes, as we go over this great work, you need to find yourself a group, a mastermind group, people who will hold you accountable to the standards that you want to achieve and to the results you want to achieve. So I think having a mastermind group is definitely a positive. He goes on, this is just some comments, and then I have a short story to tell you. He says, your subconscious mind works continuously while you are awake, while you are asleep, spasmodic, or occasionally effort to apply the rules will be of, okay, sorry, back up just a minute. Spasmodic or occasional effort will to apply the rules will be of no value to you. To get results, you must apply all of the rules until their application becomes a fixed habit with you. In no other way can you develop the necessary money consciousness. Poverty is attracted to those whose mind is favorable to it, as money is attracted to him whose mind has been deliberately prepared to attract it. What a great principle. You know, I took 4 years of Spanish in high school, and my Spanish teacher always told me that the way that you know that you've mastered Spanish is when it becomes a part of your process, your thought process. She says, when you dream in Spanish, you've mastered Spanish. And until you dream it, you really haven't got to the place you need to be to have mastered the language. And I think that's just what came back to my mind as I was reading over this again. You know, your subconscious mind works continuously. If you've got these principles in your mind and you think about them and you have the persistence to see these things through, they're going to become a part of your everyday life. They're going to be a part of your thought process. If your passion is success, you will be successful. And if your passion isn't for success, then your mind is going to be preoccupied by all these other things and you're not going to be as persistent as you should be to see that goal through. Real quick before I close up, there's a few other things here that he says that are so valuable, and I'm just going to try to run over them real quick. He says, every failure brings with it the seed of an equivalent advantage. And I think that's another important quote. He also talks about having a nightmare, and when you have a nightmare and you realize the value of your persistence by lying in bed half awake with a feeling that you're about to smother, you are unable to turn over or to move a muscle, and you realize that you must begin to regain control of your muscles. And so through persistent effort of willpower, you finally manage to move your fingers. And then your fingers, you know, you finally get your arm moving. And eventually over time, you know, what seems like hours but may just be seconds or minutes, your body begins to come back awake and you realize that you were having a nightmare. But during the nightmare, it's very real to you. And so he uses that analogy to talk about persistence and how you have to be persistent and let things become a part of you. So I just thought that was a great part of this chapter also. I'm gonna move forward. I have so many notes here, but I know we've got so little time. And I'm going to move forward to a part of the chapter where he talks about persistence is a state of mind, therefore it can be cultivated. Like all states of mind, persistence is based on definite causes. Among them are, and he lists several things here, definiteness of purpose, knowing what one wants is first and perhaps the most important step, desire, self-reliance, definiteness of plans, accurate knowledge, cooperation, willpower, and habit. So take inventory of yourself, he says, and determine in what particular, if any of these things you are lacking in this essential quality. Measure yourself courageously point by point and see how many of the 8 factors of persistence you're lacking. This analysis may lead to discoveries that will give you a new grip of yourself. Symptoms of a lack of persistence, again, as I wrap up here, failure to recognize and clearly define exactly what one wants, procrastination with or without cause. That's interesting that even a procrastination with cause can be a hindrance. Lack of interest in acquiring specialized knowledge, indecision, the habit of passing the buck on all occasions instead of facing issues squarely, the habit of relying upon alibis instead of creating definite plans for the solution of problems, self-satisfaction, indifference, the habit of blaming others for your mistakes, weakness of desire, again, going back to not having the desire to see your plan through with persistence, willingness or even eagerness to quit at the first sign of defeat, lack of organized plans, wishing instead of willing, the habit of compromising with poverty instead of aiming at riches, searching for all the shortcuts to riches, trying to get without giving a fair equivalent, and the fear of criticism. And he goes on and on about the fear of criticism and how important that is to overcome that fear. It's interesting, he tells a story, and if you have a chance to look at the book a little more closely, I encourage you to read this fully. I'll just highlight it. He talks about his own fear of criticism when Andrew Carnegie suggested he devote 20 years to the organization of a philosophy of individual achievement. His first impulse was to say that he couldn't do it. He was worried about criticism. And it's amazing, someone with the stature of Napoleon Hill can talk about his own fears and is willing to admit that even he was afraid, and afraid of what other people would think, afraid of what other people would react to. Then another thing he talks about here is he discovered that most ideas are stillborn. They're dead when they come out of your head. They need to breathe. They need the breath of life injected into them through definite plans of immediate action. The time to nurse an idea is at the time of its birth. Every minute it lives, it gives it a better chance of surviving. So don't worry about your ideas, whether they will or won't work. I like to say, make sure you have all the ideas on the table. And then the more ideas you have, the more you can work with them. So start with the ideas, let them be birthed, and then from that, move forward with persistence to achieve those things that you have in your ideas. And then you can work out the ones that work. Some of them won't work, but you can move right into the ones that do and spend your time focusing on those. And I appreciate your patience with me as I spend a lot of time on this, because there's a lot of important points in this chapter. But lastly, he talks about how to develop persistence. He says there are 4 simple steps which lead to the habit of persistence. They call for no great amount of intelligence, no particular amount of education, and but little time or effort. So here are the steps to close it out. Step 1, a definite purpose backed by burning desire for its fulfillment. Step 2, a definite plan expressed in continuous action. Step 3, a mind closed tightly against all negative and discouraging influences. Boy, isn't that a big one. And number 4, a friendly alliance with one or more persons who will encourage one to follow through with both plan and purpose. Again, a mastermind group. People like the people that I'm surrounded with here. People who are where you want to be, and certainly people who are like-minded. There's lots of people out there that can tell you you can't. But you need to avoid those people like the plague. And you need to stick with people who can tell you and who are willing to tell you that you can and are willing to help you achieve those goals. So it takes a lot of persistence. Like my wife always says, I was persistent. I am persistent. And everyone in this group can back those claims up with their own mind and with their own life. It takes persistence to reach your goals. And it's, I think, one of the most important steps of this whole process. So I'm glad you were with me. I'm glad I was able to share these with you. And I'll go ahead and throw it now open to the rest of the group for any of their thoughts.
I'll tell you what, Chris, there's so many thoughts that your discussion raises. And one of them in particular is talking about how important it is to build up the desire. you know, to be persistent. Well, if it becomes so important to build up that desire, it made me reflect, well, how do we do that? And, of course, you covered the four-point formula. But one of the other things I wanted to bring in point, because I believe that if people understood it more, they would really watch and control their thinking, and that is, like the old song says, what you see is what you get. And most people, when it comes across a big opportunity, like even Napoleon Hill, who we think of as an icon today, but he was a nobody when he first got the idea to write this book, most people, when confronted with an idea bigger than themselves, start seeing failure, the consequences of failure, the embarrassment, the money that they'll lose, et cetera, et cetera, when that's exactly what we don't want to see. What we want to see are the rewards of success, because this is motivating. I mean, who's going to get motivated by more debts piling up and people calling you embarrassment and shunning you? No, but you will get more motivated by your bank account balancing, by that more brisk step you have, by when you walk into the bank. Now, instead of checking your credits, they say, good day, Mr. Lakey, you know, all this kind of stuff. So we control our thoughts, and this whole book, of course, is Think and Grow Rich. And to help build our desire, to help accomplish and help get rich, to help follow the plan you're talking about with developing persistence, think about, dream about, and visualize yourself and create the rewards of success.
You know, my first joint venture in this business was with Carl Galletti, and it was so very different, the way we approached it. It was a big expenditure. We were doing a large mailing of a large package, and all I could worry about is how much I could lose if this didn't work. And all Carl saw was how much money we were potentially going to make. And it was a great lesson for me. It worked out fine. But I was focused on the problems. I could see how much I had at risk, and he could see how much potential he had to make. And that's very important, is to see that and believe that and enjoy that.
Well, I think part of the power of persistence, too, which Chris started right at pointing out, is so evident in my life, and I'm sure it is in you guys, too. That's so key to getting through the failures that will be inevitable. And I think one of the things you were noticing, Don, might be that Carl, for example, I'm sure has failed repeatedly, but he's seen what the successes do.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, he's more focused on the successes, which is the right place to focus.
Absolutely.
And the upside of the risk. And he knows it's worth taking the risk because, sure, you might fail, but it's persistence. You're going to keep at it till you don't. I've had failures repeatedly that any one of them could have knocked me down, and I believe wholeheartedly that most failures today, and I'm talking people who fail and never succeed, all it took was one failure to make them quit.
That's,
you know, that is such a good point, because as I've worked with customers for so many years, and notice what made some successful while so many others sadly failed, it was the lack of persistence. And I like what Napoleon said about desire is so related to persistence. But the successful entrepreneurs that I've worked with, and I've worked with so many, they all treated failure as just a stepping stone to get to success. But the failures, once they fail once, many of them give up. If they have bad results, if you don't want to call it failure, two or three times, they definitely will throw in the towel. But some of the most successful entrepreneurs, they did not hit a home run maybe the first five or six or seven or eight or nine or ten times. But they believed in themselves, they had a burning desire, and they eventually became very successful. So anyone listening to this should realize, don't treat failure as the end game. Look at a failure as you did something where the results were not exactly what you wanted. They might be terrible results in your mind, but it's just a stepping stone, and if you continue and if you persist, you can get the gold ring.
Exactly. And now, folks, again, the title of this entire work is Think and Grow Rich. The only people who are failures are those who create that label for themselves, because nobody can put it on you. And that is a decision. That is a thinking. That is a thought. Only when you decide you're a failure are you a failure. Other than that, it's simply an event that can actually give you good input, give good advice, something. I know nobody liked to hear this, including I didn't like to hear it either when I heard it, but Ted Nicholas one time said, I've had 17 businesses, and 16 of them were successful, and one was a disaster. And I learned more from that one failure than I learned from all the other 16 put together.
It's not just learning, Ted. It's also outcomes, even the worst I've ever seen. I've noticed there's always a positive way to turn it around. And it's not just what you learn from it, but, for example, a failed business meeting can turn into a dinner meeting instead that winds up more successful because you never did get together in the meeting in the office, but the dinner turns out to actually be a better atmosphere to get the results you were seeking. That's just one example off the top of my head. I've had any number of failures to, outcomes that were not the desirable one, the one I was attaining, trying to attain, that turned into springboards to other opportunities I never would have gotten had I not gotten through and failed at the one I was trying for. So you always have to remember that there's a springboard there.
Exactly. And this is, I think, one of the great springboards here is asking yourself the right questions. You know, in many cases, people see failure and they go, oh, why did I do that? This is so horrible. This is the worst ever. If you ask yourself the right questions, you can immediately find the opportunity in whatever outcomes or results you get. You may ask yourself, well, okay, I understand what happened. I see the results here. But what's great about this right now? Where's the hidden opportunity and what just happened? What can I learn from this that is going to make my next attempt 10 times better or 10 times easier? What can I go out there and find? Who can I go out there and contact? What can I read? What seminar can I go to find other people who've been in the exact same situation, gotten the exact same result, but achieved even though they've gotten that result? Who can I contact? What can I do? And by asking those questions, you move past that failure, and you're able to keep your desire and your persistence way up there because you are seeing the opportunity that really is out there instead of masking it with this idea of failure.
You know, I think a lot of people, if they knew that success was 10 steps away or 5 steps away or whatever, all they had to do, take a door-to-door salesman. You know, they may have to, even if they have a big ticket item that they know, and they know the numbers, they know that, every 10 people they talk to, they're going to make one sale, but they got to get through the 9 no's. A lot of people would skip it and would never even attempt it, only because they have to get through the nose and they can't stand that failure, even if they know that statistically that success is just around the corner. And I don't know if anybody has any final comments on this. We've got just a few more seconds before we need to go ahead and move on to the next subject.
Well, Go ahead, Ken.
No, I was going to say one thing I think it's really important to remember with persistence is that you are persistent with the correct action to get the results that you're after. And that's a whole other subject, but something to keep in mind that you can be persistent all day long, but if you're not taking the correct action to get where you're trying to go, it's not going to, it can be pretty futile. So with the persistence, make sure that you are persistent in the correct action that's going to get you, to your goal.
And remember, folks, it's all worthwhile because success truly does breed success. It's not, the failures become fewer and further between and the successes much closer together and more frequent once you get past that first need for the persistence to get to those successes.